3, 2, 1. That's right. You're listening to the It's My Time podcast, a recording of the experiences, past and present, of everyday people.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
and now, here's your host,
you know who it is,
the one, the only, Asher Chua.
Hey, welcome to the podcast, Elizabeth and Kelly. Glad to have you on today.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
You're very welcome. To introduce you to the audience, I always like to ask the question, who do you say you are?
Ooh, who do I say I am? That is a challenging one. I guess I can get started. I'm Elizabeth Anderson. In my professional life, I'm the CEO and co-founder at Lunar Lab. We do UX design and product strategy for any kind of software company. So people who are building software, we help them to make sure that that software is user-friendly and intuitive, you know, easy to use, it's profitable for their businesses, and it's also ethical, inclusive, and inclusive. That's really, really important to us. In my personal life, that's a lot more complicated. I'm a reader and a mama, and I'm a big musician. I do a ton of stuff. I'm really interested in creating a better world. So I'm very active in some of those spaces. So I don't know. Let me think more on that. Who am I? What a question to start a Saturday morning.
I was also not prepared to answer that. But I'm Kelly Lucas. And like Elizabeth said, we co-founded Lunar Lab. She said plenty about that. But on my personal side, I think that's such an interesting question because I think every year I would give a different answer. I have 3 kids, I've got pets. I love to do all kinds of things outdoors. Right now, I am so jazzed that the Women's World Cup just started this week. So I've been heads down in that this week. Love to read. Just love to have fun.
I like it. And we'll come back to it later. So don't feel the pressure. But I like starting with that question because it allows you to choose your answer, and there's really no wrong answer. But I forget how it came to me, but it was just, it's an interesting way to get to know someone, I think. But as you both mentioned, being co-founders of Lunar Labs, can you tell me a little bit about how you came to the idea, or what led you to it?
That is a wonderful question. I think we were both at, and Elizabeth, I don't want to speak for you, but I know we were both at a point in our careers, going through the pandemic, we were both on leadership teams in tech. And if you don't know a ton about the tech world, it's not very women-centric. It's very much male-dominated. And I think most women kind of get to this place where they're kind of burned out and done with tech and are kind of considering what might be their next option that's a better fit for their life. And we kind of got to this point where we just said enough is enough. And we just want to do something different, but still staying in tech, still doing what we love. So February 2021, we quit our jobs and decided to launch a Lunar Lab. And it's been 2.5 years. And I keep joking, still haven't had to get a real job. So far, so good.
Nice.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. I think we were kind of both, like Kelly said, at the point in our careers where statistically speaking, a lot of women leave tech careers. There aren't very many women who are in tech to begin with. And then it's a really common problem where women leave tech careers, and there are all kinds of different reasons for it. I mean, everything from discrimination to, just not enjoying the work environment, things like that. I think we were kind of at that space, like Kelly mentioned. And, you know, I think instead of leaving, we said, well, what if we stay? What if we make it better? What if we do something different? And I think that for Lunar Lab, our company, we've really tried hard to cultivate a better environment, something that's more collaborative, something that's more invested in the people that we're working with. Because I think with any job, and not just in tech, when we go to work, it doesn't have to be miserable. Like, we're working with these people all day long. We should be able to have a good time with them and have good relationships with them. So we've tried to cultivate a sense within our business where it's more collaborative, it's very communicative, you know, it's not so much top-down hierarchy within our organization. And it's just a lot better work environment, and something that I wish was at every company, right? So,
right.
You know, that's kind of how we landed here. And it wasn't even just about creating a better work environment, but I think also about making the tech products better tech products as well. So, you know, a lot of times in tech, we've all kind of heard these horror stories about these apps that can be so harmful, these apps that can go out in the world and really hurt people, that can, you know, propagate biases within our culture and our society. And we didn't want to really be part of that anymore. We wanted to create better products and more inclusive products, products that would go out into the world and be more used more ethically and that were not harming people. So I think that piece of it was also very important to us, and especially to me, because I really am pretty invested in making sure that I leave the world a little bit better than I found it.
Awesome. I guess kind of given the biases and how maybe we can speak more specifically to what part of tech, because tech is such like a broad term, but like similar to like technology, engineering, math, sciences, like women seem to be less in that, unless it's like in nursing, teaching, in those departments. Like, how did the two of you decide that, okay, although the stats say we don't really choose these things, like we have interest in this? Like, what drove you to say, okay, I want to have a career in tech, or like, I want to tinker with things, and like I still care for people, it's just I also care about like the gadgets and being able to make things that are like people can interact with and ultimately use.
I can tell you, I can start with that one. It's really funny because I have always throughout my life been really interested in tech ever since the first time I remember in third grade, we got to play Oregon Trail. I feel like I'm really dating myself right now, but we played Oregon Trail in third grade. We all went to the computer lab and I just thought it was so cool. These computers, I thought they were so neat. And at one point, when I was in high school, through a long series of situations, my family ended up getting a computer and I was just enamored by it. I was on it all the time. I started doing these really big newsletters and that led to me building websites. And I really liked doing that. So I would create these websites in you know, HTML and PHP. And I did it all through like text files. So this was not like the days of WYSIWYG editors and things like that. And I was so into it. I created this really huge website. And then throughout my time in college, I was in music school, but I kept getting kind of drawn back to it over and over again, right? So I designed websites for businesses to kind of pay my way partially when I was in college. So I kept getting drawn back in that way. And then part of my degree, I had a music theory degree. And as part of that, we had to do a ton with electronic music. We had to like code electronic music. We had to learn the history of electronic music and the history of computers. And I was so fascinated and into it. After I graduated from college, I ended up working in banking for a little while, but I was still, I don't know, I just kept feeling this sort of pull to come back to tech because I enjoyed that piece of it so much. And when I did get back into tech, I got more into project management, which I found out that I really loved, because project management is, you get to deal with the technology, but you also, it's a way that you bridge the gap to the people side of things. Because at the end of the day, we're making all these products, right? But every single product that gets made is made by people and it's made for people. So you can't really extricate people from computers. You know, they're not separate things that are existing. They're really so closely aligned with each other and they kind of swirl around each other. And there's people creating the things, there's people using the things, there's people involved in the maintenance of these, you know, computer technologies. And they're just, you can't separate them. And I really loved that piece of bridging the gap and finding the ways that people interact with these computers. So I guess that's how I wound up here. And that's why I keep getting involved. It's not necessarily even the tinkering or the tech. So much of it for me is about creating new things and creating new ways for people to interact with each other and creating things that make people's lives better and that we can all enjoy. So that's my side of it. Kelly, I'm waiting to hear what you have to say.
No pressure. I have always had an interest in like science and technology. I mean, I was the kid who was jealous when my brother would get like a Lego set. And I was like, I also like Legos. Mm-hmm. And then he got a science kit. And I was like, oh, can I? And I would ask him, I would bother him and be like, can I mix some of this stuff? Because they've got all these experiments. Mm-hmm. It was definitely his science kit and not mine. But I think that interest really came to a head when I was in college. I knew that I wanted to get my art degree. Didn't know what I was going to do with it. Wasn't necessarily saying like art was going to be my future. But then I ended up getting a graphic design degree because everyone said, well, this is, you know, something that you can get a job with once you get out of college. I was like, well, that sounds good. It's it's related to art, but not exactly. So when I started in graphic design, I found it interesting. But there was always like a problem solving piece that I really enjoyed, with anything. I just have a draw to, like creative thinking and critical thinking and just trying to figure out how stuff works. And so through a few different jobs, kind of backed my way into tech, inadvertently. I inherited a few projects that were kind of half baked and they needed a designer. And so I kind of edged closer and closer into, UX design and UI design and just found out that I really loved it. Similar to Elizabeth, I like that bridge between like technology and how humans work and the psychology behind like how we interact with things. So I was very much drawn to the complexity behind it also. It's like every project that we work on is incredibly different and just there's a lot of overlap between the projects, but not as much as you would think. And a lot of, you know, creative thinking and critical thinking that goes into, I think, each project that we handle and no single day is just like the one before it. So that part's really fun to me.
Yeah, I think I can echo the same for engineering, because it's like, for me, one of the things I kind of dreaded about going into engineering or civil engineering for that matter was like being stuck in an office and having to have like the replay of office space where it's like, okay, are you telling me I got to come here and we just do the same thing over and over and like we learned all this stuff, but now it seems that you can do everything in an Excel spreadsheet or you can click a button and what took you like 19 pages to write down and figure out and it's like, oh, ta-da, it's done. But like being able to both work in an office and work in the field and like interact with different people like that, just that people aspect of like learning, okay, someone's from Alabama, someone's from Louisiana, someone's from Tennessee, New York, California, like all these different things and just being like, okay, this person has this accent, this person has that accent, but like we're talking about the same things. We can cut jokes and like laugh at each other and not take things so seriously. I guess I find it really neat that, and it, your story kind of mirrors mine where it's not the, it doesn't sound like you were coerced to like meet a quota or to say like, okay, like, hey, we need you to fit in this thing. It's like, no, I like this thing. I got introduced to it somehow. And I like, okay, maybe if I go this direction, I can do a little bit more of that, like graphic design for you, Kelly, and for you, Elizabeth, being able to look at going for music and seeing like, okay, I also relate to the Oregon Trail game. Like looking at just, okay, these things, computers do these neat things and people use computers to do these neat things. And just seeing where that kind of comes to play. It's cool to see that you have the ability to problem solve, but also recognizing that in your own life, in your own like day-to-day, as problems arise, the thought isn't like, screw this, I'm going to go complain, run away and just like, forget it, forget life. Like, of course we have those days, but it's like, it's good to like take a breath and kind of come back to be like, okay, I can figure something out, or like, I can think of someone I know, or like I can look over here and be like, there's another way to do this. There's like another approach. There's something. It's like, we don't just throw up our hands and quit. Like, can you speak to that a little bit? Like, is that something you got from your families growing up, or like just from the friends group that you have, sport teams, anything like that? Like, have you always been encouraged to just continue pressing forward and not just give up at the first hurdle?
Yeah, for me, absolutely. I alluded to this in the intro, but I have always played sports. And I think that's a big thing that I drew from that is just the perseverance that, and it's silly, it's just a sport. Like, it's not, you know, it's not going to end the world if somebody loses. But I do think, you know, when you're on a team, there's a team of people that are depending on you to just show up and do your best. And I think that that's important. And I think that that's true every day for work too. We're still a team. We're not playing sports. It's a business, but I think there's still that, you know, you have to show up every day. You have to persevere. You just have to grit through even the days that are, you just kind of want to crawl in bed and you don't want to solve that problem. You don't want to look at it again. You don't want to think about it again. But then I think that those moments, Elizabeth and I have them all the time, but we'll be on a call, like just rolling this problem around in our heads and we'll go, oh, Kelly, Elizabeth, like I figured it out. This is what we need to do. And those moments are still so fun. Even like I said, after kind of getting our teeth kicked in tech, I think it's still fun to have those moments and to realize, well, this really is what we're supposed to be doing. This is it. We don't need to pack up our toys and go home and go find a new job or go find a new playground. We're here to stay. And I think that at least from like childhood onward, I think that that perseverance is just something I've always had to have. Definitely had a different upbringing than Elizabeth did, and I'll let her kind of speak to that. But I think, you know, I always had a family that just encouraged me to do my best and just show up every day.
Awesome.
All right. So Kelly talked about my background. So we're going to go a little deep here. So my background is I grew up in really severe poverty, and it was also pretty abusive, right? So my dad's in and out of prison, did not have a good home life growing up. And this is like generational poverty, right? So many, many generations of my family had lived in this situation. We were from rural Alabama. You know, I'm a first generation college student. So it was really hard for me when I was growing up because I had so many obstacles and there were so many systemic things that were in my way. And there were so many people just throughout my life who were telling me that, you know, you can't, you don't do this. I always knew from the time that I was really small that I was like, I want to get out of this. Like, as soon as I figured out that you don't have to live that way, I was like, we're out. I'm not doing this anymore. And so I had so many people along the way who were like, you can't do that. I remember even when I was in high school and it was time to apply for colleges and I was at the top of my class, I was doing really well academically. And our guidance counselor told me that she would not help me with college applications because she said it was a waste of my time because of my family background. And so this kind of happened to me over and over again, but I have always just been a person who's like, I don't want to say I don't like take no for an answer, because I think that can kind of be a cop-out sometimes, but I don't like it when people tell me that I can't do something or that something's not possible, or because I feel like so many things are possible if we just kind of shift the way that we think about it, or you know, make an effort towards it or think differently about things. So I've always been a person who wants to push through. And when my guidance counselor said, no, you can't go to college, I'm not going to help you, I was like, well, I'm just going to do it anyway, because that's what I want to do. Because I feel like that's going to be the way that I can sort of get out of this bad situation that I'm in my life. So I ended up being able to on my own apply and get scholarships and things like that. We could not afford it. Like, I had to have scholarships in order to do that. That's why I ended up with a music degree. But so kind of going back to the persevering and getting through problems, I have always been a person who likes to take a problem and solve it. I love doing that. Sometimes it can feel almost like a puzzle. Back to one of the kind of roles that I had when I was one of my earliest roles in tech, I was in project management. And part of my job was like the fixer, like in the mafia, you know, when there's like a fixer who comes in and like they've just made a mess of things and that person comes in. So I would kind of do these project rescues where this project would be going really, really badly. And they were like, oh no, this is so bad. Our company's about to lose like millions of dollars. You know, this customer's unhappy. Things are a mess. And so my job would be to kind of swoop in and fix it. And I loved that. I love like taking this big mess and being like, okay, how can we make it better? Like, what steps do we need to take? How do we need to go? And I don't know if that is perseverance from, certainly nobody in my family or our friends when I was growing up encouraged me to persevere through things. I think there was, because of these systemic pressures, there is a lot of this idea that you should just sort of accept where you are and know your place, not want more beyond that. But I was just not that person. And so I think that has led me far in life and has led me to a place where when I see a problem, my immediate instinct is never, oh, sit down and avoid it and look away. My instinct, and maybe sometimes to my detriment, maybe sometimes I'm a little bit too much of a go-getter, but my instinct is always, okay, there's a problem. What can we do about it? Let's go. Let's fix it. Let's talk about it. You know, let's dive right in feet first. So,
right. That's awesome. And I think to that point, it's like when, like, I know currently it seems like the term systemic kind of gets thrown around, but I when it applies, I think it's good to point it out where, like, when guidance counselors or parents or teachers are like people that are supposed to be like the guidepost or the the things that hold the society up, there tell a child like, oh no, you're never going to do that, or it's like, this isn't going to work out. And it's like, geez, like I thought you're supposed to be this, but it sometimes takes like you having that determination or the mindset to be like, no, okay, this is what I want to do. And I'm going to do this. Like, you're not going to tell me no. Like if you're telling a 2-year-old, like, no, you're not going to do this. It's like, no, I'm going to do what I want. Until the world beats me down to the points where I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do what you want me to do. And I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to fight back or anything like that. I think it's good seeing that perseverance, because I think sometimes when I hear people talk about the problems in the world, it's too easy to just want to change the problems and not create solutions and like make it to where like I have to create a solution to actually make it worthwhile to say this is better, like my solution is better than having the problem that we currently have. And I think that strikes a better balance of just being like, okay, I'm not happy. The world should make me happy. And it's like, if the world's not making me happy, like nobody gets to play with the toys. Like I'm taking my ball and going home. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. And it's like, all right, like you can do that, but you can't really play well by yourself unless you manufacture something else.
Yeah, I think that the world does beat people down. And I think that there can be a lot. It can be very difficult to overcome some of that stuff. I know that even for me growing up the way that I did, I think I had a lot of internalized issues around class and poverty. And I think that it is in some ways set up to push that on people, because, you know, if you feel that way, if you internalize it, and it does make it harder for you to get out of it. And, you know, for some people that is desirable. People outside of that situation, I think sometimes want to hold people down and want to hold people back. And that's really the unfortunate kind of reality from my worldview. And I think that's terrible and unfair to so many people, because I think there are tons of people who have wonderful potential, who are great people, who are, you know, I think everybody is valid and everybody is deserving of a good life. And I think it's so unfortunate that there are so many systemic pressures that hold people down, you know, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And I think there are a lot of people who uphold those systemic problems in our society. And it's just, it's not fair. It's not right. I don't think anybody should have to go through those things.
But I guess, Kelly, I'm curious, having the sports background and kind of knowing like, things aren't always going to go your way. Maybe a ref won't call the game your way, or they might have been paid off or something like that. And sometimes we don't see the story at the get-go. Maybe if you're watching a movie, you're like, okay, I know this is a great story. It's had great reviews and like people have spoken well about it. But I think, is there something to be said about like life not being fair, but learning to become not a callous person or just like a rough person, but like the world's a mean and nasty place. Like I've heard it said, and it's like, you have to become somewhat nasty, or just like, you have to become hardened in a certain way to face like the things that you two are facing, where it may not seem right. It may not look right, but I think taking the approach that you two have taken is better than maybe just snapping our fingers and having the beautiful utopia so many people speak about having.
Yeah. I don't know. I think about all of those times when I just felt like, you know, nobody's coming to save you. Mm-hmm. Like there's no one that's going to swoop in and be like, here, let me fix this problem for you. Or let me just show you how to persevere or get over something. And I think about those moments. Like I left an abusive marriage when my kids were 1 and 3 and became a single mom in the middle of the recession without a job. And I think about those moments. I'm like, nobody's just swooping in to like to fix the day. And yeah, I mean, we could all leave those situations when, like I said, you've had your teeth kicked in and you could become a bitter person and you could become, you know, a person who doesn't let people in, or somebody who just says, you know, the world is real screwed up and I'm just going to become part of the screwed up part. But that's never been in me. I've always been super empathetic. I've always cared about people, always wanted to, figure out a way to put more good into the world than the bad that's there. And whether that's in sports or that's in business or that's in everyday life. I mean, I think it's important that we all like work on this planet like it's a tiny village. You know, there's borders, there are people from all different parts of life and the world. And I think it's important that we kind of come together and find ways to lift each other up. Like I think about Elizabeth talking about the guidance counselor, like, well, no, here's an application to Subway. I'm like, that all she had to do was like be that force in the world that's like, no, I'm here to like provide that step up when you didn't have it.
Right.
it. Like, that's so easy to do. And like, why would you choose to be just the worst parts of the world? There's plenty of that. There's like enough of that. And, you know, even, and I'm rambling a little bit, but I also think about another really important part of our business that, that we're both passionate about, and it's working with underrepresented people. Like, there's such a difference that we can make in these small instances. And I think that's just part of what we're here to do. And it might not be hugely impactful, but we're just two little ladies running a business doing what we can.
I want to add to that too, that, so wild to me when bad things happen to people and they become hardened, because I've seen it happen to so many people. And I just can't wrap my brain around it, because from my life experience, I have had so many bad things happen to me. I've had a really difficult life, especially when I was growing up. And my instinct was always, okay, this really bad stuff happened to me and it was really painful and it was really hard. And now that I have the resource, I don't want that to happen to anybody else again, because it was so painful. So if at any point I have the resources to help that in any way that I possibly can, I really want to make sure that I'm doing that, because no one should have to go through those things. I can't wrap my brain around the mindset of, you know, it was hard for me, therefore it should be hard for other people. I think it was hard for me, therefore I don't want it to be like that for other people. It's so painful for them. And it's unfair. It was unfair that it happened to me. It's unfair that it happens to other people. And we should be working towards a more fair society, right? And I think that does go back to what Kelly said with, you know, some of the work that we want to do, because people have been so historically excluded from the tech industry. And I know that the tech industry can be a source of creating generational wealth for your family. It can be a source of, you know, providing economic empowerment for not just yourself, but for creating jobs, creating economic empowerment for other people, creating opportunities within the industry, you know, creating a better world. So there are so many opportunities in this space, and that should not be confined to one demographic group, right? Yeah. All of these people, and I always use the term historically excluded, because I feel like that reflects what has actually gone on. It has been an intentional exclusion. And so anytime that we can lift people up and create that economic empowerment and create a better, you know, situation for people, like Kelly said, even if we are not, you know, we can't do everything, we can't fix the whole world, but if we can just do a little bit, that helps me sleep at night.
I think that's awesome. And I like how you brought up the, I heard it said that that's the difference between a hero and a villain, seeing, okay, something bad happened to me, I'm going to make sure that this doesn't happen to someone else, versus the villain that says, this happened to me, so I'm going to make sure the whole world burns or everyone else is able to feel this. And I think just seeing that balance, sometimes it's like in the questions that we ask, is understanding that anybody can be a villain. Like it's got to take some doing to be the right kind of hero, and not like window dressing or saying like, okay, like this would seem nice, but like you guys are actually doing the work. And like, it's easy for someone to judge, or someone from the outside to just be like, oh, your life must be like this because you look like your background's nice, you seem like you're well put together, this and that. But like, if anything, life has taught me is even being like being quote unquote an outsider, like immigrating from a different country and then living in the United States for over 25 years. And people would like have certain assumptions. And it's like part of it is systemic. Another part, like systemic, even in the fact of like something so much ingrained into your mind to where you don't know to think different. But like being able to see examples and like point to examples like yourself and other guests, it's that it's really encouraging to reinforce, or even to encourage myself to be like, okay, like listen to this talk or hear this story, because it's that no matter what you're being told, it's not always true. Even the guidance counselor might be like, oh no, you shouldn't be doing this, you should be doing this instead. But it's like, like regardless, there's always going to be people in positions like that that may not have earned it, or that shouldn't be there because they're detouring a lot of talent. But having other resources, other outlets to where we provide people the things that are actually worthwhile and helpful, I think is a great resource. And I'm curious to know for yourselves, in the helping of people that are historically not being able to be put in the positions, and also having the positions or like doing the work in tech, like what's something that's like misunderstood or misknown? Because it's like, I think I briefly mentioned before, like some people talk about quota filling, or they talk about, oh, people, it's like they don't talk about the human insecurities that people have. It's like, okay, maybe this is a boys club now. And there's like, we don't want the girls over here, like boys playhouse, no girls allowed, like sign on the outside. But it's like, there's like childhood insecurities that get carried into adulthood. And if you kind of step back and look at it and you're like, it could be systemic, but it could also be like this, the system, so to speak, is like, it's really just like a big child, like not wanting to be an adult. And to be like, okay, like when you're oppressive, or when you're just like, everything has to go my way, and this is the way that it has to be, then everything's good. But actually, if you learn to play with other people and you learn to actually be more of who you are as an individual, then you're not as threatened by someone that doesn't look like you, doesn't sound like you, doesn't have your background. It's like this problem that you've agonized over for 15 years could be solved in 5 minutes because somebody else had a thought or an idea to be like, what about this? And it's not like, it's not emasculating. It's not demeaning. It's not, it doesn't always have to take something from you. And maybe sometimes if you feel that someone else coming to a resolution does something to you, I think that's an opportunity to inform people just in general, or at least it's informed me to be like, okay, maybe I'm focusing my attention on the wrong thing. And there's an opportunity there to see the world differently and actually be able to enjoy it for a change. I said a lot, but take your time.
You know, I think, you know, going back to kind of what you were saying about the way that we sort of conceptualize these industries or the world around us or the people in them. I think for tech particularly, one of the things that I think about often, because we, you know, we do a lot of work in this space, but we also do some volunteer work and things like that. And one thing that we talk about from time to time is how the tech industry is, you know, now it is thought of as like this white men's industry, right? Mm-hmm. I think it has really intentionally cultivated this idea within the industry of like, who is a tech person? Mm-hmm. I think there is a lot of that really pushes people away from it. I think it can push people to think, oh, I'm not the right kind of person, so I don't belong in tech. So maybe they don't even go down that path. But then once you do get into tech, I do think that because of this idea that's been cultivated of what a tech person is, it can be a little insular. And the tech industry itself has been sort of like the Wild West for the past few years. You know, it's not like banking or insurance or something like that, where it's very regulated. There are no regulations. And in a lot of ways, there aren't really any rules over here in tech. So people can kind of do what they want and cultivate whatever feelings they want about the industry. And it has been very intentional from my viewpoint of creating this idea that like white men are these like masters of tech, and they are the people who, you know, are in control of everything, and they should be because they know what they're doing. And lots of lovely white men in tech, but that's not the only people who can be in tech, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not even historically accurate. You know what I mean? I know we all watched Hidden Figures and we all love that movie so much, but so much of that movie and the book and the stories of Katherine Johnson and Dorothy Vaughn are so powerful because those were the people who built the tech industry for what it is today. And, you know, they were not getting paid. They did not get the recognition that they deserved. And they took us to the moon, man. You know, like they were like, you know, so underappreciated for so long. Until we have now discovered that, oh my gosh, you can make money off of this, right? Mm-hmm. So now we've got this different idea of what it means to be in tech, and it doesn't have to be that way. It does not have to be set up in a way that tech is only for one type of person and not for everybody else. I think tech is something, like we said earlier, everybody uses these products. Everybody benefits from these products, and sometimes everybody is harmed by these products. And so everybody's voices have to be in the room, mm-hmm. you know, as part of creating these products and maintaining these products and these tech products. Everybody has to be there. Everybody's voice is important. And we can't just unilaterally decide that only one type of person is appropriate for tech. And I want everybody to know that. I want everybody to know that everybody is valuable and important in tech. Everybody belongs here. And so some of the work that we are doing is trying to help people who have not historically had as much of a chance in the space, help them to be more successful, help them to, you know, build a product that has a greater likelihood of being economically viable. Make sure that we are using our experience in this industry to sort of impart that on others and be like, you can do this. You can take this thing and you can make it something really special and you can make a lot of money off of it, right? Mm-hmm. For you and your family, you can create these jobs for other people. And you don't have to be a certain kind of person to do that.
Right, right.
Anybody can do that. Kelly, would you add anything to that?
Yeah. When you were talking, I was thinking about a conversation we had a couple of years ago. And I just think about all of the really intelligent women that we come across who are, you know, looking to found their first tech company. And I think back to a conversation we had a couple of years ago with a woman who was a doctor. She was an MD. And she had talked to multiple people, development agencies, you know, other mentors. And she came to us and just said, look, I have this idea for an app and I can't seem to get any sort of advice. I've never done this before. I've never, you know, built something in tech. What do I do? Who do I talk to? And it just blew me away that she'd had so many conversations where people treated her like she didn't understand anything. And I'm like, this woman, she's a doctor. Like she's gone through multiple years of school in addition to what, you know, I went through, Elizabeth went through. And I'm like, how did no one take that same opportunity? Like we were talking about with the guidance counselor to just like provide a step up for someone. That's what we're there for. Like, if we're going to be in tech, why are we not helping more people be successful in tech? Again, it's improving outcomes for everyone. That the gatekeeping piece of it just drives me insane. I'm like, we all have this opportunity to help. And again, whether it's like some people in tech see that feel like there's finite resources, and if I share this knowledge, then someone's taking something from me. Mm-hmm. That just blows my mind, because I just think if we have the knowledge to share it, help people like accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. And what she was doing wasn't, there was nothing that we shouldn't just help with. Explain how this is done in like simple, practical terms. It's not like she was unintelligent and couldn't understand it. It's right. Just that people made it seem more complicated than it was. And I'm like, look, tech is just tech. I'm not saying that there aren't complications with it, but it's certainly not more complicated than being a surgeon. Mm-hmm. So situations like that just really frustrate me.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That definitely makes sense. And it seems that maybe the phrase cutting your nose in spite of your face, where it's that like insecurities where someone feels like, okay, if I give this up, I'm going to be replaced. But it's like, it maybe points to the fact of if you haven't done anything to improve your position or improve your knowledge base, you're really shortchanging your ability to like provide a resource. Because it's like, it's for anything, I think it's like, it's tough to struggle through something and just be like, okay, I finally get it. Like, I'm finally an expert in this thing. Maybe I did the job that I'm doing now. I've been doing it for 2 years and it feels like, okay, I finally understand what it means when I have this type of dirt, sand, clay in my hands. I can say, okay, this is sand, this is silt, I think, this is clay, this is like a different type of clay. Okay, I'm in this region, this is what the rock is supposed to be like, this is that. Other days I'm like, I don't know what this is. Like, it's either sand or it's clay. Like, what the heck is silt? Like, one day it'll be something else, something different. But I have people that I can lean to, and there's not this thought of like, okay, if I tell him this, he's going to take my job. But I heard it said in the notion of you want to make sure that you teach someone well enough to where you can be replaced, because then that can elevate you. And it's like, if you're not in a position where you can do more or like look at things from a management perspective or a leadership perspective to be like, okay, how can I help the most people like kind of get out from the bottom and actually teach them to teach to where it's like, are we stair-stepping up, or are we just kind of like happy with the status quo? Everything's the same. And it's like, the world's got all these problems. Like, let's flip on the channel. It's like, on today, here's all the issues. And it's like, what did we do to solve it? Nothing. Let's just, tomorrow, here's all the issues. It's like, okay, guys, come on. Like, either sign up to do something about it or find something else to talk about. Because it's like, I'm curious, what's been the pushback that you've gotten as you've gone this venture? And like, have people been like resistant to you, or have they been kind of like, let's look into this. Like you have MDs coming and talking to you now. You have like other people that are like, okay, this is worthwhile. Like you guys teamed up with Kim and being able to set up this interview. It's like, I wouldn't have guessed 4 years ago that this would have happened, but it was kind of my hope to be like, oh yeah, like real people exist. And this is how real people interact with each other. They actually do things that benefit one another.
That's such an interesting question. I think that there have definitely been naysayers. There was a whole reason that we launched our company. I mean, basically getting told that you can't do something or do it well, or no one will buy it, or no one will see the value in it, and we just need to do it for free. Those moments have definitely like caused me to doubt myself. I'm like, well, okay, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe I just need to, like said, pack up my toys and go find a new playground. But you know, I think to those conversations that we've had with other founders who were in those same like places of doubt. And I think it's been so important for us to remember that we can choose to help build other people's confidence. And in those moments, I think it also builds our confidence in knowing that the advice that we've given people and seen other business succeed, like there's a certain amount of confidence that comes with that when we see that, you know, our advice worked or business are doing better because of how we help them. And I think that that's what helps combat those moments that I feel like I'm doubting myself. And I'm like, am I good at this? Like, I don't know. Why is anybody paying me to do this? I feel like a dummy half the time, or like, I don't have the answers. But again, I think it's just important to remember that we're here for a reason. And that I think what we do brings value to people and brings value to businesses. And it's just important to remember that even in the moments of self-doubt, it's just important to just remember we can do this.
We have had so many people that were naysayers for so many different reasons. And it, you know, back to Kelly, I think that there have been people who did not see the value in what we did and who told us, you know, you can't sell this. This can't be sold. They were wrong. You know, there is some of that. I think occasionally when we talk about ethics, I certainly have gotten some pushback from time to time when I have brought that up, that, hey, you know, we need to be thinking about how can this product harm people from the very first moment that we are talking about these products. We don't need to find out after it's already hurt somebody. You know, we need to be thinking about that now. Definitely have gotten some pushback on that. I don't know that I've ever listened to those people because I think they're wrong. Like, I think that we should not be creating things that harm people. And I think too, just the way that we operate our business, I think we've gotten a lot of pushback on that. I think the way that we try to operate our business is not so based on like these hierarchies or dominating other people or doing things at the expense of other people or, you know, thinking about our economic viability before we think about somebody else's. For us, we tend to think about, or at least for me, I don't want to speak for Kelly. For me, I think about when I am going up the ladder, I need to be bringing other people with me up the ladder. And I think there is, especially in tech, such this idea of like, you go up the ladder, you need to pull the ladder up after you. And so I've gotten a lot of pushback in that regard from people who said, you know, that's not scalable. You're not going to make much money. And I was on a beach recently, and this guy was talking to me about selling coconut water. And he said this thing that I thought was so interesting. He was in like this coconut water war with this other guy on the same beach, and they were both selling it, and they had used to be partners. And one of them wanted to raise the price, and this broke him up. And the guy says to me, he says, you know, I'm just trying to live in the world. I'm not trying to own it. And I thought that, I don't know, I got so much, maybe I'd had too much coconut water, but I got so much out of just him saying that. And I think that's so powerful. And that's something that I think about for me. I'm not trying to own the world. I'm trying to live in it. I'm trying to create better outcomes for other people. So when people push back against me and they say, you know, raise the price of your coconut water, think about yourself first. You know, empower yourself first. Who cares about everybody else in the world? I don't know. I don't buy into that. I think it's sad that people think that way. So strongly disagree. We'll keep doing it our way.
Yeah, it seems like some short-sightedness in that, where it's like you can empower yourself and you can build a hierarchy of competence instead of dominance, and actually have people want to cooperate and work interdependently, and not just be like, okay, you're either dependent or you're independent. Like, there's no like okay, like we can make this thing work together. And that's amazing. I think that's a great thing, that to see it in real time, or at least hear about it as I'm hearing now, that as you've gone along this journey, have the naysayers even come back up in your viewpoint, or have you guys even bothered to be like, oh yeah, I wonder what so-and-so is up to, or like, oh, we're going to show him, or has it become more about just the, oh, we're just on to the next thing, and like, wait, who's that? And then getting an email is like, oh yeah. Is that you? Oh, okay. Yeah. We've moved on from that.
Tend to put those people out of my mind in a lot of ways. I think it's, I don't know. I think about it from time to time, especially when something works out really well. And I'm like, man, all those people said that we couldn't do this and we're just doing it. So look how wrong they were. I think that's the extent to which I think about those people. Earlier in the week, we've been trying some new things with, you know, our hiring process and making it really equitable and really inclusive. And one of the things that we have done was being really intentional about sending people that we are interviewing all of the interview questions and really preparing them for the interview and telling them, like, this is what we're looking for. And we actually rejected a candidate not too long ago. Really hard decision, by the way. We get so many amazing candidates. And that person reached back out to me and was like, hey, I just want to let you know that even though I didn't get the job, I had such a good experience with this. It was so humanizing. Like, I felt like you really respected me. And I just wanted to say how much I appreciated that. And so when we get things like that or feedback like that, I think that's the piece that makes me think back on all of those people who said, don't send interview questions to your candidate. Because it works so nicely. We've never had a bad outcome related to it. We've only had positive outcomes, only positive feedback. And I'm like, why not try something new? Like, if the systems are broken, why not do new things or better things or experiment with new things? And I think it's sad to me that, like I said, the extent to which I think about those people is that, okay, you know, I'm so glad that we didn't listen to them. I'm so glad we did our own thing. And how sad that you are living your life in this way that is so bound to systems that don't work when you could make it better.
Right.
I mean, I just think about like 2.5 years ago, if we had have listened to the naysayers, like we just never would have launched this business. I'm like, well, what a lost opportunity that would have been.
Right.
Elizabeth and I didn't grow up like wanting to be entrepreneurs or like start businesses. I never one time thought that I would ever own a business. Never wanted to, was not interested, terrified me. We're both very risk averse. So to me, it's so funny that, and we can never remember who said it first, but you know, mid pandemic, we're both, homeschooling our kids and we were like, well, fuck this. I guess we're just going to have to start our own company. Yep. And then it was like, we have to do this. It was like,
here we go.
Yeah, well, I guess we're doing this. And then, you know, there we were with the business, with a whole LLC, with an actual business license. And it, even when it launched, you know, I still had those moments and I was like, are we doing this? Like, are we really doing this? And I still have those moments now. Not like we have a successful business. We're doing great. But there's still those moments that I'm like, is this real? Like, this is what we did. Interesting. Yeah. But again, like my younger self, even 2.5 years ago, I've just been like, well, this is crazy. And here we are. So it's just funny. I don't think we spend, nearly the amount of time like doubting ourselves at this point. And that feels really good. I feel like with every you know, contract that gets signed, we get further and further away from questioning what we do or doubting ourselves or and I feel like we're well into like the confidence era of our business, and that feels good.
Yeah.
Nice. I like it. And how did you two actually meet? I didn't think to ask that before.
Oh my God.
This is actually our third company working together. First one owning it together. But we actually met at the largest fintech company in the world, basically, that no one has ever heard of. We were working on two different product teams, just happened to be in the same office here in Birmingham. I was working on a team based out of New York, and Elizabeth's team was based here in Birmingham mostly. And our desks were pretty close to each other. And so I think we met at specifically at some, maybe like the Christmas lunch or something at work. And we happened to be sitting next to each other. But we didn't really even build that much of a friendship while we were there. I mean, we'd known each other. But then we went to a separate company a couple of years later, and we're both on the leadership team there. And that's where we, you know, just day in and day out work together, figured out how to make our teams work together, best ways to build products. And it was really nice to work with someone so closely and kind of know, actually we think about this all the time because we have founders that come to us and they're like, oh, I'm looking for a co-founder. I'm like, that's a terrifying spot to be in. Because the nice thing was Elizabeth and I got to work together, you know, like I said, in director roles where we were having to make these like day-to-day business decisions together. And it was really nice to have the confidence that we knew how to work together well, and we knew how to get to an answer and solve a problem together. And there were no egos involved in that, and just kind of setting down what we thought was best and like coming to the right solution together. So I didn't have any like qualms or trepidation going into this with Elizabeth. I was like, no, I know what we're doing. We'll be fine. And Elizabeth, do you want to talk about the 50-50?
Yes. That's actually one of the areas where we have gotten the most pushback on is when we set up our business, we were very, very intentional about setting it up so that we have 50-50 ownership. A lot of businesses, when they get set up, you know, one founder is like 51-49%, or they'll both be 49%, and then there'll be this extra 2% that goes to an attorney or some outside party for, you know, decision making or tie breaking or whatever. And we were really intentional about being like, no, we're not gonna do any of that. If we have a problem together, we are just gonna work it out. Mm-hmm. Like it is, like we're gonna talk about it, we're gonna come to a decision about it, and we're gonna feel good about it. And we have gotten so much pushback. I mean, all the time. Every time I talk to somebody about this, they say, "Oh, you can't do that." I'm like, "Well, we're doing it." Like, well, what if you disagree on something? Then we'll talk about it and communicate it. Like, why would you do it another way? Like, and I think that does come back to that idea of it being sort of non-hierarchical within our business, which kind of, I don't know, sometimes people get very weirded out about it and it kind of blows their mind that it is truly very non-hierarchical. And we both do actually and truly have a 50-50 say in these business decisions that we're making every day. But I think it goes back to what Kelly was saying is, if you meet somebody that, you know, your values align really well and that you really trust and you have a good working relationship with, and you know that you can communicate well with, why do it any other way? Why introduce a hierarchy where there isn't one? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So, like I tell people all the time, the way that you know that you found somebody that you can co-found a business with is if you trust them to be on your kids' pickup list at school, which Kelly definitely is on my kids' pickup list at school. Because you need to just be able to really trust somebody and be able to communicate really well with them. And again, got so much pushback on that all the time from all different types of people. And I just don't see any point to doing it any other way. It's worked really well. I can't envision a situation where it wouldn't, because people ask, you know, what if you disagree on something? And the truth, I mean, like we don't agree 100% on everything all of the time, but when we disagree, we just talk about it.
Yeah.
And then we hear each other out and we listen to what the other person has to say. And I can't think of a time that we have disagreed on something and then come together and had a conversation about it that I was like, ugh, I don't like where we went with that. I'm mad at Kelly about it or whatever. I think we just work it out. And I know that maybe sounds a little bit flippant, but it's the truth, right? I think that's so important and valuable, and something that I would really recommend to people who are trying to find a co-founder. If you can't trust somebody enough to go 50-50 on a business with them, why are you getting involved?
Yeah. I mean, I think you really do have to find the person that you know you'll just figure it out together. Mm-hmm. Like it's not too dissimilar from a marriage. We say this all the time. It's like waking up with that intention that like, we're going to land at what's best for our business.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to be best friends. We happen to be friends, but like our business is not based on us being best friends. It is based on like running a business together. And then we just happen to be friends as well, which is just, it's nice. But if I didn't think at the end of the day that we could find common ground and make a decision that was best for our business, like we just wouldn't be in business together.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Was that part of the consideration upfront, kind of getting into it? Because I think like both seeing the two of you and having kids, being married, And just having that correlation being made before between where I've heard it said that marriage is very much like a business if it's treated that way versus like going the love approach and being like the happily ever after. And then when things kind of don't go that way, it's like, well, crap, this isn't what was sold to me. Mm-hmm. I guess with that, like, is that how you guys approach the business? And is that on a personal level how you approach getting married or like starting a family and having those two things like work for you in your life?
That's such an interesting question. I like to think it doesn't have to be either or. Like I love my husband to pieces, but I also see and take that marriage with the same like level of seriousness that I do our business, which is like, I wake up every day, make a conscious decision to like be a good partner in my marriage and be a good partner in my business. And I take those jobs seriously. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, I don't think marriage can work with just love. I mean, I think there is work that goes into it that you can't just like, maybe be romantic about it and think that like love's just going to persevere and I don't have to do anything. Like it's just going to last forever. And I think business is the same thing. Like just because we had a good idea that it's just going to manifest into being a successful business. Like you still have to put in the work every day. And I don't know, maybe that's like just the rational, practical, pragmatic side of me that's like, well, you put one foot in front of the other and you do the things and then eventually good things happen. And, you know, I'll be married, 9 years next year, which is wonderful. And I'm still super happy. And same with business. We're 2.5 years into it. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to keep doing this because this is working out well.
Yeah.
I would echo so much of that. I totally agree. I will say that when we got married, so I've been married for 15 years. And when I married my husband, we were very in love, but also we had a recognition that marriage in a lot of ways is an economic arrangement. And before we got married, we actually sat down and we made a spreadsheet. And then we said, okay, these are all these like major life areas. You know, do we actually agree? Are our values aligned on it? Like, how many kids do we want to have? Like, how do we feel about debt? I think those things are so important going into any relationship that you have, no matter what the relationship is. If you are, you know, jumping into something that is an economic arrangement with another person, whether that's marriage or, you know, starting a business, I think you need to make sure that your values are aligned with the other person. Now, me and Kelly did not have to make a spreadsheet because we had worked together for a while and we kind of knew. But I think it is so valuable to be aligned in that way and to understand each other, know where the other person is coming from. And before you start making the big decisions, know like who that person is and how they approach things. Because I'll tell you, one of the things that I love the most about, you know, my husband is that I kind of know how he's going to approach stuff. I know how he's going to feel about things. I kind of have a good sense for how he's going to react to things. I think that's true about Kelly too. I kind of am like, before we talk about something, I'm like, I bet Kelly's going to kind of think about this. And how can I approach this thing in a way that is going to, meet Kelly's needs also if it's a business decision? Or how can I approach this in a way that's going to meet my husband's needs if it's a more personal decision? And just thinking about that other person and being aligned with that other person and understanding their needs and trying to do something that benefits both of you.
It's so funny because I think there's so few moments that I can think of in this business where we've ever even really had to have those conversations where it's like, we almost always see things the same way, which I think is really, really rare. Like there's very few times that we'll be like, well, I think we should do this. And she's been like, I think we should do this other thing. It's almost always, we think we should do this. And we're like, yes, of course we're going to do that, because that's where we were already kind of both landing. So hindsight, I actually would have thought we would have disagreed more than we have, which is kind of just refreshing. It's like, well, it's actually going better than I thought it would. I kind of expected this part to be a little bit harder. And so far, you know, in spite of the challenges that we've had, it's just been smooth sailing, which doesn't mean it hasn't been a lot of work. It's been a lot of work, but it's been smooth. And another thing that we have in common is like, because we're both very risk averse, we tend to like over worry and we're both very anxious. And so usually it's just us like, what can go wrong? What can go wrong on like a day-to-day basis? And we're just talking about that stuff. Like dress is just like coasting down the middle. And we're like, what about this? What about this? Have you thought about this? How about this thing 6 months from now?
Kelly, I made a contingency plan. A last thing I will say about any of that is that I do think that it's true that we do not disagree very often, but I think there is really something to be said about not digging your heels in and thinking my way or the highway. I think that is so, so important, because I cannot tell you the number of times that I have come with some big idea and been like, Kelly, what about this? And she'll be like, what about this other way? And I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant, actually. or I'll say, what about this big idea that I have? And Kelly will say, that's so good. What if we just change like this one little piece of it? And what ends up happening is we create a better idea than either one of us would have ever had on our own. And so much of that, I think, is because, you know, we're not like digging our heels in and being like, it's my way or the highway. Like, right. My idea is the best idea anybody's ever had. I think when you talk about it and roll these things around together, I think two heads are better than one in a lot of ways. And you can come up with something better if you just talk about it.
I think that's very encouraging. And hearing it from both of you, the way you put it, is that there's value in having both the love and the business, the practicality of it. And it's not to overstate one over the other, because it's great when you see how things can go. But like I've heard it said over and over, everybody's getting on the manifesting type thing. They're like, all you got to do is just manifest this thing, or like the prosperity preaching. It's like, if you just believe, it's like, yeah, you can believe in something, but you gotta make out a plan. Even if it's a bad plan, at least you're thinking in that direction. You're walking in that direction. If you're carpooling, you got your thumb out. Maybe nowadays, like, just be careful out there. But like, if you've got some action behind like what your intentions are, I think more times than not, that comes through and people see the good in it. But you still have to be a little shrewd to be like, okay, there are some people that have bad intentions out there, and we're prepared for that, or at least we're willing to get prepared for that. But before I let you guys go, definitely let people know how they can find you, how they can learn more, or even like do business with you on board, or just learn more about your company and you as individuals.
Yeah. So you can find us at www.lunarlab.io. So Lunar Lab, all one word, and then .io. That's our website. We love helping anybody who is a business, you know, just to create better software. And, you know, we're doing that through helping them design it, helping them create a strategy for it, helping them research it. And sometimes we even do some project management for it. So anybody who's out there who's building software of literally any type, startups all the way up to giant enterprises, any type of industry, we would love to help people with their businesses. And again, find us at www.lunarlab.io. If you want to look for me, I am Elizabeth Anderson. I know that's a very generic name on LinkedIn. So hopefully you can find me there. I love connecting with people. I love learning about new people and meeting new people. So I'd love for people to connect with me. Kelly, what about you?
Yeah, same for me. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. Kelly with an I, not IE, not a Y, just an I. And like Elizabeth said, we're on all the social media, so you can find us there.
Awesome. And what does IO stand for?
Well, you know, I think there was this sort of trend in the startup space where they were doing like all the .coms are taken, right? So there, you know, there's a lot of .ios these days, but funny enough, EO, of course, is one of the moons of Jupiter. So it kind of works.
It's pretty neat. I guess that's how you know you're a tech person, because it's like everybody would just know .com, .org, .net. And it's like, you got to broaden your horizons a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
I got it. And going back to where we started, maybe you've had some time to reminisce on it, think about it, and be like, huh, where'd you come up with that? But from how we started the podcast to where we're closing the podcast, are you still who you said you were?
I think so.
I think that we would need a lot more time for me to feel like I could make a more all-encompassing synopsis of myself. So I feel like even if we have this conversation 50 years from now, I will probably give a similar answer, and that like, I'm just a little human on the planet trying to leave the world a little bit of a better place. The rest is just ancillary.
Exactly that. Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for your time. This was a pleasure having this interview, and I hope to do it again sometime in the future.
That was really fun. Thank you for having us.
This is great.
You're very welcome.